number 21, HPA suction dredging rules. This is a briefing and public hearing. Randy, Pat, and Teresa. Take it away, please.
All right. Good morning. I'm Randy. I'm a division manager in the Habitat Program. In May of last year, we began rulemaking to remove motorized and non-motorized suction dredging from the Golden Fish pamphlet and instead require standard hydraulic project approvals for this activity. In February of this year, we filed the CR-102, which was signaled the start of the formal comment period. This comment period ends April 8th. Today we are here for the public hearing on this rulemaking, but before you hear from the folks who have come to testify, Teresa will give you a brief overview of what materials are in your notebook, and then Pat is going to give you an overview of the changes that are being proposed. Our goal is to keep this presentation short so that there's adequate time to hear the public testimony. Thank you.
Well, maybe you remember the drill on HPA rules. We need to walk you through the materials that you have in your briefing book, in addition to the regulation summary, right? The summary of this item, the first of the materials is the CR-102 document, which was filed on February 20th and published in the Washington State Register on March 6th. Next in the briefing book is the file containing or a document containing the rule changes in a markup form for WAC sections 220-660-030, which are the definitions, and 220-660-300, which is the mineral prospecting section. And the next is the file containing or the document containing the proposed new WAC section 220-660-305, which would be the suction dredging section, and Pat's going to speak to these in a moment. After that is a small draft, small business economic impact statement document that includes estimated costs for an individual or business to comply with the proposed rules. And finally, we provided you a draft of the regulatory analyses pursuant to the Administrative Procedure Act, which includes a cost-benefit analysis as Section 6 and a least burdensome alternative analysis as Section 7. Other than the rule changes, which I'm sure Pat will give you a chance to ask questions on, do you have any questions about the documents? Excellent. Good. So all of these materials were made available to the public on the HPA rulemaking website, and they've been there since February 25th, which is the day we opened the public comment period. I also wanted to update you on the comments we've received through today. We've gotten 161 comments today, including 16 that seem to be in support of the proposal, 140 that appear to oppose the proposal, and 5 that neither support nor oppose the proposal. Pat? Oh, a question.
Oh, Commissioner Baker.
So among the comments on this issue, I've heard that there eventually will be comments from some courts and also possibly from the legislature. Do you intend to address either of those in this presentation, or is it just, are we just going to be talking about the rule change?
We aren't going to address any of the comments we've received today.
That was just a dumb little joke. I was just saying that other people are going to weigh in, and I'm trying to wake everybody up here. But what I'm wondering is if we're going to proceed on the same timeline with adopting or not these regulations, based on the fact that there could be some pretty big changes to whatever we do in the very near future.
That sounds like a Randy question.
So there's a couple things going on. One, there is legislation right now that affects mainly ecology. But what the legislation does is it affirms that ecology has the responsibility, thank you, to regulate suction dredging and other motorized mining under the Clean Water Act and also the Washington State Pollution Control Act. And in that legislation, it also bans them from issuing permits under those two authorities for motorized prospecting that's in waters of the state that have been designated as critical habitat for ESA-listed species. And right now, that has gone through the Senate. It is currently in the House. And if that does pass, then we'll have to decide what we're going to do with our rulemaking. In that legislation, there's also a piece that a change to the hydraulic code rules or statute, which would require motorized prospecting applications for motorized prospecting to have a proof of compliance of the Clean Water Act from ecology as part of their application. So that would affect this rulemaking as well. Again, we'd have to rethink what we're going to do on that. If that passed, we'd have some changes that we would need to make as a result of the statutory changes that would affect us. The other is the Cascadia Wildlands litigation. I don't believe there's a court date for that yet. Cascadia filed an appeal of a decision from the Thurston County Superior Court. That stated that Fish and Wildlife did have the discretion to include suction dredging in the Golden Fish pamphlet, and that we didn't violate the Administrative Procedures Act when we adopted those rules, but that's still pending.
Thank you. Okay.
Anything else? Okay. So Pat Chapman, I'm the Regulatory Services Coordinator and Habitat Program. So I want to, let's focus back on these proposed rules and not the legislation. So what I want to do is go through really quickly the main highlights of the rule changes we're proposing. There are a number of other typo corrections and things like that I won't address, but these are the main ones. So based on your input to us to take dredging out of the pamphlet, the first thing we had to do is look at some of the definitions we have in the pamphlet. And the first one that we actually got some comment on early on from the hard rock mining industry was they wanted to make sure that definition of dredging wasn't going to affect them. If they're tunneling under streams, that doesn't affect them. So we added some wording there that says it doesn't include subsurface hard rock mining. Take their concerns out of the table. We also had to define dry land dredge, which is a method that we didn't anticipate and really no one was doing when we had the original rules for suction dredging. So we defined that, and I'll have a picture of that later. But that's a piece of equipment that can be used as a dredge, but it doesn't have to be in the stream to operate. So we wanted to make sure we defined that, and then later on I'll talk about some of the restrictions on that equipment. We also had to redefine the term for suction dredge because previous definition didn't account for gravity dredges. It only mentioned motorized, so we had to revise that. And also clarify that if someone is using a bulb snifter, like a turkey baster, uses a suction bulb, that isn't considered a suction dredge. So we just had to clarify that. Then we get into the rule that deals with the language in the pamphlet itself. So 226-60-300 had to add language in there that says mineral prospecting equipment is authorized through the pamphlet except for suction dredging. So clarify that. The suction dredging is put in 305 later. And that to suction dredge, people would have to get an individual HPA. So that's included in here as well. There's some equipment that is combination equipment. It's a combination high banker that can be used upland, or it can be configured as a suction dredge. And so we wanted to allow that equipment, if they're operating as a high banker, to allow that use under the Golden Fish pamphlet. But if it's a set up as a suction dredge, it'd be required to have an individual permit. So we added that language in there. But also said that if you're going to have that set up as a high banker, you can't have the equipment, the nozzle for a suction dredge, you can't even have that on site. So you couldn't use that equipment under the pamphlet. Then in the pamphlet, because we're eliminating the suction dredging, we eliminated the two columns regarding the size of suction dredges that are approved. We removed that from 300, and then we repeat that back into 305 for the individual suction dredging. Now, in section 305, that's where we have the specifics for suction dredging, which requires an individual permit. And it details all those requirements. And essentially what we did was pulled the requirements that are currently in 300 for suction dredging that are in the pamphlet. We moved them out unchanged into 305. So there's other than dry land dredging, there's not any new requirements. So again, at number three here, you see that we require an individual HPA. Or I shouldn't say individual, which they, it could be a multi-site HPA where we have a prospector could apply for, say, five different locations in the same HPA. It's a standard HPA, not necessarily an individual one. We then also, under B here, we realize that if somebody applies for a whole stream or statewide, our biologists would not be able to evaluate those sites effectively. And so we had to limit the size of a location that could be applied for to either the size of their prospecting claim or 1,300 linear feet of stream. So the biologist can actually get that evaluation done to determine what can be permitted. Then we get in the dry land dredge requirements, and essentially what we're saying here is because that equipment can be used upland and move a significant amount of material, we wanted to make sure that they couldn't use that equipment on slopes that would deliver sediment to the stream and their effluent would not enter the stream. So if you look at this picture, a lot of people don't know what a dry land dredge is, but let's see if I can... Your pointer. So here's the nozzle for the dredge, but a dry land dredge has this extra water supply that shoots water under low pressure and provides water in this excavation pit that will suck up the material. So that's what we're regulating here. It's different than a regular dredge that would be in stream. Oh, did that display it? Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Then we get into the other two requirements for dry land dredging is, you can't have tailings and wastewater go into the stream because they're typically working on material that wouldn't be in the stream anyway. And also that the water that's supplying the dry land dredge can't be under high pressure. It has to be under low pressure. So they're not hydraulicking the slope and tearing up the landscape. And then, again, we added the timing table that's in the existing pamphlet and included the size restrictions on the suction dredge back into the individual HPA requirement section. I think when you asked it to do this last year, you were really keen on understanding how many prospectors are using suction dredgings and where they are doing that. So we're requiring an annual report, and we had quite a bit back and forth internally of how we would do that as well with some of the prospectors as we had our public meetings. And we want to minimize the information, at least initially. So we're really going to ask date they did the work, the amount of work that they did, type of work and the location. Then as we get more information, if we need more information, we can modify what requirements we have for reporting. But they'd have to report every year by the 1st of February of what activities they did. And finally, aquatic invasive species. We did talk quite a bit about that and came up with the fact that a lot of the concern was equipment coming in from out of state. And so we have a requirement that before that equipment can be used, it has to be inspected by an authorized department representative and necessary cleaned. And then if equipment used in-state is moved to a different location in-state, that would have to be dealt with at the same time. A lot of prospectors work in the same place time after time after time, and if they don't move it around, they don't have to do that. And then lastly, once all these rules are adopted, we're going to have to publish a new golden fish pamphlet to incorporate these rules and then publicize what we've done so folks can apply. That's all I have.
Well done. Any questions from the commission at this point? Okay. Oh, Mr. Thorburn.
Yeah. So the processes and all were summarized. One of the issues that's come up in the past as we've discussed this is the economic analysis, and that was actually something that withstood a court challenge, and we had to kind of go back through when we initially created rules for the golden fish pamphlet. Can you talk a little bit about your process? So do we have sort of lessons learned perhaps, and just tell us, you know, what was done?
Well, that was a lesson learned, definitely, that last time. And this time, we've evolved in our understanding of what is needed to meet the requirements of the Regulatory Fairness Act. Of course, every time we do it, we think we're getting closer, and this time we think that we're closer still. What we did this time, in addition to a lot of research on businesses and businesses that are involved in in mining and mineral prospecting and mining, we eventually decided to send out a survey of mineral prospectors to ask them a lot of questions about what it would take to comply with the rules, which is what meeting the Regulatory Fairness Act is sort of all about, is what's it going to cost to comply with the rules? And so all of the information about how that was conducted and the conclusions are in that Small Business Economic Impact Statement. And if you want me to summarize those numbers, I can do that right now. But is that what you mainly wanted to know?
Well, I wanted to know process, but yeah, I think it might be, if it's okay, Chair,
let's summarize those. Let's do that, Teresa, in a brief form, and then we can take the public comments and then go back with follow-up as needed.
Okay, sure. Well, what we estimated then is that the cost to comply with the rule for a person per year would range from about $196 to about $1,352 a person a year. So that's assuming a certain number of people will apply for permits, which, as you know, is something that's difficult for us to estimate right now. Based on the results of the survey that we got telling us how many hours it's going to take to fill out an application, how much time they think it's going to take to clean their equipment for the aquatic invasive species, questions like that. So the range, $196 to $1,352 per person per year. That's also assuming a permit is issued for a five-year period.
And just one follow-up. So on the reporting, the annual reporting that you talked about, Pat, this was something I know I was very interested in developing the rules, because we kept hearing, we've got all these people out there who aren't accounted for, and we don't really know what's going on in our streams with the way that we're doing it. So the annual reporting was an important thing for me to see in what we're proposing. It's going to be required once a year, so the reporter then, I presume, can report on a single... We're making it pretty simple, report on a single form all the activities of the year to try and cut down on that kind of...
Right. We haven't finalized what that form would look like, but if a prospector had, say, five different permits, they could probably report each permit on the same form, conglomerated form for every permit they had. But for each time they use that, they would have to identify that's
great.
What they did.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? No?
And we can come back if you have more questions.
Yeah, if you just want to move to the row behind you, we'll start with the public comment period. For the folks in the audience that haven't done this before, most of you probably have, 3 minutes. I'm going to call you up two at a time this time, because there's four of you in total. First one would be Scott Brown and Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, Director, Deputy Director, or Chair, I'm sorry, Deputy Director and Director. I'm Scott Brown, Resources Coalition, small scale miner. I've been down here several times and we've talked about this numerous times. But what I would like to talk about is the fact that during the hearings that we've had for the last two bills that just came out, there were testimonies that were put in there that were, I would say, not full truth. For one, Mr. Clark made a statement during one of the hearings that we can go out and prospect anywhere we want in the state. We cannot. Our Golden Fish pamphlet tells us we have to get landowner permission. Number two, we cannot dig under vegetation, wooded material, in the banks, toes of the slope. So basically, in essence, that leaves us just the waters now. We have no other place to work. Secondly, I'd like to point out that a suction dredge is not an autonomous machine. It's hand-operated by a diver, which is not even in the definitions of what's going on. Also, there was testimonies made that we create turbidity, pollution, stir up chemicals, whatever. Back in 2005, Department of Ecology did a report on the Similkameen River on arsenic, zinc, copper, lead. And that was put out in 2005, and the publication number was 0503-007, which clearly stated that it would take multiple number of dredges, even in low water conditions, to create 10% of what was there. So the whole thing about us polluting or damaging the systems is untrue. We've actually had on one of our mining claims, actually five of our mining claims, last year, the rulemaking for the Salton River was the windows were shortened for work windows. Had biologists go down there to do a site inspection. And what did they find? They found salmon spawning in the discharges from our dredges. We created habitat that was not there to begin with. And it's being used today. And it's being monitored very closely. Also, we would like to take that in prior testimonies, there's been testimonies of definitive incidental taint by a suction dredge. There's no documentation within WDFW stating a suction dredge miner has taken or killed a fish. None. We even have a FOIA stating that from 2008. Also, we'd like to point out that when we're in the waters, we're cleaning up the toxic metals that were left behind by fishing, by hunting, trash from hunters, fishermen, campers, hikers, whatever. One of my particular claims, I went up on last summer, I ended up pulling 955-gallon trash bags of trash out of the creek and off the side of the claim, which is absolutely ridiculous. And to say that we are doing the damage, it's not us. Okay? California's had a moratorium for 10 years. And guess what? Salmon decline still continuing on an average of 75% a year of what they had the prior year with no recovery. So,
thank you, Scott. Appreciate
thank you.
It. Steve Jones.
Chairman Carpenter, Commission members, Director Susskind. My name is Steve Jones. I'm Conservation Director for Clark Skamania Fly Fishers, a 270-member organization, conservation and supporting group in the Lower Columbia region. Clark Skamania is a member, one of more than three dozen sport fishing and conservation groups that represents thousands of freshwater fishers here in the state. As you know, Clark Skamania was invited to be part of the working group that created the rules here before you today. We happily participated in that. We're not entirely engaged throughout that process. Specifically, we were charged with bringing the state rules into regulatory compliance with the Federal Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act. Rules that you are considering today are attempting to do that. But I think it's important to make clear that the reforms you have here today do not fully achieve compliance with the ESA or the Clean Water Act. Motorized suction dredging mining causes an incidental take, which is in violation of the ESA and the Clean Water Act. Working on contract for WDF&W, our two resource consultants in 2006 published a report called Small-Scale Mineral Prospecting that concluded that motorized suction dredging did result in an incidental take. That was a study you paid for and received in 2006. And so to end that take and to come into compliance with the ESA and Clean Water Act, the state needed to remove that practice, suction dredge mining, from critical habitat for ESA-listed species. The Washington State Legislature is considering a bill that would, as of today, remove suction dredges from all critical habitat in the state. That Senate Bill 5322 was approved by the Senate 30-17. It's now in the House Rules Committee, where in conversations on Capitol just a few hours ago, I do believe it's going to come out of Rules Committee to the floor in the next week. So in response to Vice Chair Baker's question about does this in any way alter what you're considering here today, I do believe the Commission should consider the possibility that this would become law and alter your rulemaking process. We even heard from Ms. From Randy earlier, she said, and I quote her, if that does pass, we are going to have to decide what we will do with our rulemaking. So I would move that for that reason, Clark Skamania Fly Fishers respectfully asked the Commission today to delay action on this policy change until the legislature has acted on SB 5322, and doing so would give WDF&W policymakers time to consider and incorporate any new legislative mandate into these proposed rules. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, gentlemen. The next two people are Billy Bourgeois and Kim McDonald.
First. Oh, no, go ahead, sir. Your name's on it first.
Go ahead, Billy. Take it away.
All right. Thank you for letting me be here. And all high-honored people is great. I served in the military, and I come out here to prospect. It takes and calms a person down. You've never had anything so calming by being in the water. and they're saying, okay, we're dirtying the water. Well, then why don't these people go out there and clean up the water first? Then we won't stir up dirty stuff. You're sitting out here, you're suction dredging. 99% of us are long-arm dredgers. They don't know what that means. I have seen them out there watching what we do and writing down everything, even ask us questions, and we answer their questions. But when they write it up and send it into the paper and show it all that, every bit of it's a bunch of lies. It's not what we're doing. It's not what we said. And then they're saying we've got to clean our equipment. I clean my equipment. I clean it really well because I want to get the gold that's in it. Because if I don't take that mat out and clean it and clean up my equipment, I don't want to put it in my truck dirty. They're telling you all this stuff and they don't know. They're going to have somebody inspect my equipment. From what I've seen of what they're showing on this little film they had here a while ago, they ain't got the foggiest idea what's going on. I could bring a suction dredge, three different types, put them in here, and they can't tell me which one's a high banker, which one's a suction dredge. They can't tell you any of that stuff. Even if we show it to them. A high banker or a combination high banker and dredge. The only way that thing can be a dredge is if it's got the suction hose in the water. And they talk about pressure from a high banker to run a high banker on the shorelines. That's a suction from the water coming up, and it's not high pressure because they don't pull that far and that fast and that high of pressure. All it is water coming through our sluice to clean the rocks and the material and get it to move through our sluice boxes. And so, you know, they're against all this. And actually, if you stop and look, it's from all the way down in California, all along this whole coastline. And then the next place, you know where they're going? They can't do nothing in Canada because Canada will run them off. They're going to Alaska next. They're wanting to keep us out of the environment. They don't want us around the rivers unless we're going to fly fish and that kind of stuff. You know? And it's wrong. They've been fighting this and fighting us, and we've been doing everything we can to abide by all the rules, all the regulations. And we do. But then it's still never going to be enough. All they want you to do is walk by that river and go, that's so pretty, but don't step on that blade of grass.
Thank you, Billy.
And that's the whole thing.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Jim?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Carpenter, of the Commission, and Director Susswein. My name is Kim McDonald, and I've been asked to take one for the team, coming down for a late afternoon meeting. So I'm here for over 80 stakeholder groups and businesses throughout Washington State who are seeking reform of Washington regulations regarding recreational motorized mineral prospecting. Among the groups I represent today are Trout Unlimited, the Snoqualmie Tribe, Sierra Club, Washington Wild, Washington Environmental Council, Audubon Washington, Wild Steelhead Coalition, Pacific Rivers, Washington Conservation Voters, and more importantly, over a dozen distilleries and breweries who rely on clean water for their products. Like my colleague, Mr. Jones, we participated throughout the summer and fall in a working group for these proposed regulations that would remove suction dredge mining from the Golden Fish pamphlet. During the meetings, our coalition sought to encourage WDFW to seek a formal consultation with the federal wildlife agencies on the nexus between permitting suction dredge mining in critical habitat and possible incidental takes. As the Commission is well aware, this case law, which holds the permitting agency can be liable for an incidental take. During this rulemaking, a formal consultation would have been within the purview of the agency and would have alleviated significant concerns we have regarding suction dredging in a time of enormous public anxiety over our salmon resources, whether they're being managed as we watched the orca starve over last summer. Mr. Jones and Randy Thurston have also talked about the Senate Bill 5322. I'd like to also add that this bill has enormous support from the governor, the Department of Ecology, Department of Natural Resources, the Attorney General, and even WDFW has testified in support of this legislation. Last, a number of our stakeholders have submitted comments to the CR-102. Other than the vital issues of the ESA and clean water compliance, we've also emphasized that the self-policing aspects of the regulations are inadequate. There's no verification whether a miner has confirmed cultural and historic sites, which is extremely important to the tribes in the state. No verification whether the miner has notified the proper federal authorities or landowner, and no verification whether the miner is even aware of the ESA takings issues. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. Again, we believe the CR-102 process should be put on hold until WDFW receives further direction from the state legislature and the governor. And if WDFW chooses to proceed, we maintain these proposed regulations do not in any way protect fish life nor comply with federal laws. Thank you.
Any questions from the commission? Okay. Thank you, folks. Commissioner Thorburn.
Question for the two prospectors who testified. Scott, can you come? Come on back. You as well, sir. I can't remember your name. I'm sorry. But
Scott and Bill.
So, yeah, Scott and Bill.
Mr. Thorburn.
Yeah. So, you know, I've listened to your concerns about the reasons that have been put forward by the groups who are seeking more regulation of what you're doing. And there is disagreement. We've certainly heard that. They disagree. You disagree with what's being presented. What I didn't hear from you today is we now have a proposal before us for some rule changes, and I didn't hear anything about how that's going to impact your activities. It does still allow you to be out there, and yeah.
It will allow me, but the problem here that I'm having is I retired from my job last year. I wanted to make mining a job of my own. I wanted to go out and I wanted to succeed at something and fail at it on my own, not have someone to dictate when I'm going to fail. If I fail, it was because I didn't do it properly. If I received a citation for violating the rules and laws, I didn't do it properly. You know, I'm more focused now on the small-scale miners than I have in the past 7 years. I spent a lot of my time working with them. Education, training them on the proper ways of doing it, showing them where they can and they cannot do. You know, for example, a testimony given about us going anywhere we want in the state. Well, I can't pack my stuff up and go run to Spokane and go jump in the Spokane River. And the reason why is because, number one, the city, the county, private landowners, there's nothing over there that's federally registered land. That is all private land over there or owned by the county or by the city. Our own rules dictate that we have to obtain landowner permission before we even go there. And what we have is we asked for a simple 7 miles out of a total of 67,000 that are currently in the state as the federally registered and maintained mining claims. What's done with the rest of the waters of the state, we're good with that. We just want what we own. We own the minerals. We bought the rights to those minerals on those lands. And the only financial feasible way for us to do it is to dredge. Because of the rules that are here now that we have, again, we cannot undermine brush. We cannot dig up trees. We cannot remove them. The only viable place for us to work is in the waters. It's the most financially feasible and simplest way for us to do it. Working on federal land, we have to go in and apply. We have to put in a notice of intent, a plan of operations, and have a reclamation bond if we go and disturb anything on the surface.
I am still not hearing how these rules are going to impact
it. Well, it does impact because the time involved in putting in for an application, okay, the 45-day waiting period to get that application, And then if they want to do a site inspection, that's me traveling clear over to Eastern Washington, 2.5 hour drive, to go do an hour site inspection with these people. So now there's 3.5 hours out of my day right there. It's very difficult. It's not an easy task. Gas prices just jumped 85 cents a gallon over the last week. So now I'm paying $3.20-something a gallon for regular fuel. And it's 167 miles one way.
Okay, thanks, Scott. So, do you want to add anything, Bill, to my question?
You're talking about impacting my life. You know, you're sitting in here telling me I can't do this. I'm not a 10-year-old. You gave me rules. You gave me regulations. And I hear them back there. That's fine. Because they don't know what they're talking about 90% of the time. I follow those as right to the T. If I don't, then I get fined. But yet, even if they come out there and look at what we're doing and ask questions about it, and they still can't get it right on their pictures or their description of our equipment. Just like he says, we can only work in the water. High banker is not in the water. That water cannot go back into the river. So we have to build a sub pond here to hold everything we pull out of there to put it in. Where are we going to dig the material? Now we're digging up on the dry land. What does it say? You're not supposed to do that. We can only dig in the water. So if I can't dig in the water, if I stick a shovel in that water to bring my material up here to the high banker, have I just broke the law? But they're telling me I can use a high banker. You know, so, yeah, it infects me. Matter of fact, I even go to Arizona during the wintertime to where I can play in the dirt over there. And we have to suck up the dirt, the dust over there to get valley fever to where we can do things that we enjoy doing. And you know, there's been mining going on ever since before Christ. If you stop and look, the Egyptians and everybody else has been doing it. All the natives in the United States supposedly has done it.
Thank you.
So, hey.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
That brings us to conclusion of today's activities.